Afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Well, I think we should still do free advertisement of the week for Hot Water Plumbing Hero. What a great name for a company. And after we didn't have hot water for a few weeks, I got to tell you, he was the Hot Water Plumbing Hero.
He was a hero.
He was too. Robert Gutierrez. You can find him at hotwaterplumbinghero.com. Brilliant. Didn't even make it complicated or tricky. I have a tricky phone number, though, so just go online. But the phone number is 888-482-4287. If you don't live in Reading, well, you might be out of luck. But if you do, there you go. That's your hot tip for the week. Hot water. Super important. Otherwise, you're camping out in your own house, which I'm basically against. I like camping. But if there are doors, there should be no camping. Oh, my goodness. All right. Anything else that we have to...
Nope.
Alex, got anything in there? Anything we forgot?
Uh-oh. Oh, no.
He's talking to himself in there.
No.
No.
That all is to say no.
So our guest, this first hour, we're doing two different things today. So the second half is an update on the California, Nevada, Arizona gas crisis and the national security issues it broaches for the country. So you might want to stay plugged in for that. The first hour here, we're going to talk about money. Interesting. Interesting pairing. So our guest comes from Publius PR, our friend Kimberly over there. She sends us all sorts of interesting people. His name is Mark J. Kwan, Q-U-A-N-N. He's the founder and president of The Perfect Portfolio and the author of Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes.
Which sounds pretty good to me.
I pretty much stopped reading at that point, but use the buy, borrow, die strategy to get rich and stay rich. He's known for breaking down complex tax rules, thank God, and showing Americans how to legally reduce taxes, protect their income, and build long-term financial security.
I still say the IRS is going away. That's my hope and dream. We'll see if it happens.
Put him on the slow boat to anywhere, right? So, Mark, we won't belabor the beginning. We'll add some of your other fun facts, or maybe you'll share with us the ones that you like. You grew up in Manitoba in a small mining town, so you have kind of an interesting history, and we don't want to cheat you out any time here to smarten us up, because paying no taxes, I think, appeals to 100% of the people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, glad to have you. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely. So where would you like to start?
Well, let's see. I think a little bit of background. I was Canadian born. My dad was a miner uranium in 1977 when I was born, little town Thompson, Manitoba. There was no financial education in my family for like three, four generations. So we've just been like poor for four generations. So I was like, wow, I hate being poor. When I was a teenager, I was we're really, really poor here, you know? And so I decided, somehow, I'm going to make money. I don't know. So my mom called me Money Mark when I was a kid. And I hated school. I hated reading. I wouldn't go to school. Something inside me said, school is kind of dumbing me down, and do what you're told, and sit there and be obedient, and go get a job, and whatever. And I was like, there's something wrong with the schooling system. I just didn't, something in my gut, so I stopped going to school after grade 9. And in Canada, fortunately, they allow you to go to college without a high school diploma.
Really?
Went to college for, yeah, totally, yeah. It doesn't matter. You can walk into a college, take a test. They go, hey, cool, you passed your test. Welcome to college. After 2 years in college, I was like, this is the biggest scam ever, because when they get you into college, this was 25 years ago, I'm like, here's your student loans and credit card debt. So I was like, oh, this is a scam. But I was like, oh, at least it's fun. I can take out some student loans and credit cards and hang out with my Canadian friends and go to college for a couple of years and go out a beer and have a good time.
No, Canadians drinking beer.
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard of such a thing.
What?
We have a couple of rumors. Yeah. And hockey, apparently that does happen. So, anyways.
Basically you know, the plot of Strange Brew.
I was going to say.
It is. Yeah, for sure. But there's a great video called Illegal Canadian Enforcement. Very, very funny. But back to my story here. So, I basically dropped out of college. I went to the United States with no green card, illegal immigrant. I got a job as a security guard for $6 an hour. And then eventually I got a job as a private investigator. I used to chase people around Los Angeles on workers' compensation claims. A very dangerous job at the time. But I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I went, oh, this is why I hated school. I was like, okay, now I understand why I hated school, right? So right, then I read all of the books, Cashflow Quadrant, Robert Kiyosaki. Then I started, I found a way to get recruited into the financial service industry by getting Patrick Bet-David. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he was kind of broke at the time. We were in Granada Hills. He taught me to sell life insurance. And then I was writing my first book at the time. I wrote my first book. Even though I hated school and reading, I wrote a book. It took me 5 years. And I was a financial advisor for 14 years. I used to train financial advisors for a really big company. And 2018, I was pretty disgusted. I was in California. And I was disgusted by the entire financial industry because I sat in those big meetings where they talked about, you know, maximize profitability for shareholders, well, what's right. And they said, you're a fiduciary financial advisor. I was like, this is the most corrupt system ever. So I resigned, started a company, and then I eventually ended up during coronavirus. I made a lot of money after the crash, and I started a financial education company, and here we are today. So
you were destined to work for yourself.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I thought school was so dumb. Sit in your chair, listen to the teacher, do what you're told, put it over your hand to go to the bathroom. I was like, I'm out of here. This is dumb. So
too many rules.
Too many rules. Stop telling me what to do. So,
oh, that is funny. Well. So, the thing that caught my eye, well, kind of all of it, the more I read, but the beginning of Kimberly's promo for you was about the Trump savings accounts. And I thought, I don't know anything about that. Zero.
Ah, okay.
And so we thought, we should have him come on and tell us about it.
Yeah.
Well, how does that work?
It's just $1,000. So from now until 2028. You know, the government's going to put $1,000 into any child's account as a, you know, a startup. Like, so you're born. Wait, when you're born, you get $1,000 in your investment account. And it's tax deferred. There's some things I like about it. There's some things I don't like about it necessarily. But it plants a seed, right? You're either teaching your kids to be investors or you're teaching them to be savers, right? If you're going to teach your kids, save money, get good credit, put money in a retirement account. That's bad programming, right? Your kids are, neuroplasty is you're programming your kids to think a certain way, right? And I've seen the inside of the financial industry. It's pretty nasty. I mean, retirement accounts, are you kidding me? You can't retire off a retirement account, but just the psychology of it says, hey, get a retirement account. Basically means give all your money to Wall Street. You're never going to retire, but at least Wall Street can retire off of it, you know? So, but again, Trump accounts are really powerful because just think about me, right? Imagine when I was born, there was a Trump account and my parents put $1,000 in my account when I was born and I was 16, 17 and I said, wow, my family talked to me about investing. Wow, where would I be right now? Because for some people, it's going to plant the seed of, hey, become an investor. The kid that was curious like me. And seeing their investment account there would go, wow, I want to learn how to invest, right? And today you have the best opportunities ever to get wealthy, in my opinion. Just technology and what people can do and the strategies they can read about. Anybody can get financially free, and they don't need a retirement account to do that. So the Trump accounts are just more about planting a seed to become an investor.
And so do the parents open the account and then apply for it, or how does that?
It's form 4547, which is pretty funny for they named the form, right? 4547, right? Humorous.
I'm sure that was just an accident.
Oh, yeah, I thought it. Yeah, exactly. Oops, 4547. Yeah, you can go on trumpaccounts.org, I think it is, or trumpaccounts.net. And you could just basically, you could open up your account. Now, people, if they're born between 2005 and 2028, the government will put $1,000, right? So anybody can open up a Trump account. But it'll be interesting for those kids that are born between 2025 and 2028 because it gets them a head start, you know?
If they yeah.
Yeah, and the parents can add like $5,000 a year if they want. Run the numbers on it with $1,000 in. If the parents put $5,000 a year in there, and they kept doing that, by the time the kid's 55, he'll have about $13 million.
Yowza.
Should be able to yeah. do okay on that.
And we should have figured out the domain. Of course, it's trumpaccounts.gov.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should have. There we go.
That's yeah, right. I just looked it up. I was like, oh, yeah, duh. Wow, that's pretty interesting. I've heard it kicked around, but I never looked into it. I didn't. I don't have little kids or anything, so I didn't look. But I saw that, and I thought, yeah. So let's tell people about that. So if they did that, $1,000 when the kid is born, by the time they're 55, if they put in $5,000 a year, just consistently the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
And they wind up with $13 million.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not bad.
No, that's pretty good.
But it's more about planting the seed, though. You know, so for example, my first book, I wrote about the banking industry. Now, here's the worst part about the system, the financial system that they don't teach you in school. Okay? In fact, school is complicit in this, right? So, oh, yeah, how do you know? Good point. Good
how,
point.
Do you, how do you know this, Mark?
Well, I did go to grade 9 and for a little bit, for a couple weeks. So,
well, yeah. You knew neuroplasty, so we were excited about that. Or neuro.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's literally you're programming your child. Most people, they don't know it, but they're programming their children to become poor. Okay? Here's how they do it. Go to school, save, work hard. Here's how to file your taxes. Save money. Get good credit. Put your money in a retirement account so you can retire one day. You've successfully programmed your child to become poor. You can run the numbers all day long. All you've been taught by is there's a private company. They produce all the financial literacy for all the financial advisors, CPAs, and colleges and universities. They're the regulatory authority. They're actually funded by the banking system. And who do you think they create all the financial education to benefit? You or Wall Street and the government? Guess. Yeah. Just which one it is. Yeah, so, you know, it's that bad. In fact, they've done studies on this. If a bank sells somebody 5 products when they're a child, the child will actually look at that bank for all their financial choices in the future. Okay? This is why the big four, they compete like crazy. They want to sell you the checking and the savings account to the kids. Oh, we'll give you a free checking account and a savings account. You're thinking, oh, that makes sense. They kind of save, right? See, they're trying to earn your trust, and they want to make sure that your child only looks to one place for their financial advice. So they go, oh, wait, got to get you a student credit card now. Oh, free student credit card. Oh, like, oh, God, that's so good. Building my credit score. And then they go, oh, let's get you a Roth IRA. Let's get you the financial. Let's go get your financial advisor. You need a financial advisor. Gets you the Roth IRA and the 529, whatever, and a 401k. You're cooked. They're going to go back to a bank that has a fiduciary responsibility to the shareholders, which means maximize profit at any cost. And they're not trying to help you retire. They're trying to turn you into a passive income stream for Wall Street, a multi-generational passive income stream. So if you teach your kids and they teach their kids, they locked in with passive income streams. Now, the retirement accounts are tax deferred, so you're deferring income taxes. Well, you're not allowing yourself to retire early because you're putting your money in a retirement account, which makes sure you can't retire till 65 or 70, which makes you work and keep paying income taxes. Income taxes are the highest form of taxes, okay? Makes you fund Social Security and your Medicare, which Social Security is the definition of a Ponzi scheme. You're not getting any money. You're jamming all this extra money into something that, you know, is not going to be there for you in the future. So, yeah, it's a rigged system. And people think, I'm educating my child, save money, get good credit, put in a retirement account, pay off your debt, get a Roth IRA. That all comes from Wall Street. You don't need any of it.
Wow.
So, well, you need to teach your kids
But your idea isn't to just rip through everything you make. So let's take a quick break because the alternative to that is not just, you know, make it and blow it as you go. You have an alternative plan.
I do.
Yeah. So we're going to come back and talk about that. Our guest is Mark J. Kwan. He is the author of Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you've played before. California's a brand new game.
Ah, yes.
I know the feeling.
So true. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, Mark, if we're not putting it in the bank and sitting on our hands feeding Social Security till we're 65, the alternative is?
Invest and use the strategy that billionaires use. Okay? Very simple. The strategy was coined at the University of Southern California in the 1990s. Okay? So, USC business professor said, wow, I need to simplify how ordinary families become billionaires. Came up with three words. Buy, borrow, die. Okay, so the third one, we probably know how to do that, but we'll bring that in. So buy. Anybody can put $100 in a brokerage account. Anybody. So this covers anybody. My youngest student right now is 9 years old. My oldest student is 95, former fighter pilot. Okay, anybody can do this. Okay, anybody can start investing on their iPhone. They can put $100 and they could add $100 a week into their iPhone. They just use a taxable brokerage account. The thing, a taxable brokerage account is only taxable if you sell it. If you never sell it, it's never taxable because you never trigger the capital gains taxes. So anybody can invest right now, and they can grow it tax-free, and they can grow it without ever paying taxes on the growth. Okay? No state, no federal, no Medicare, no Social Security taxes. Because investments, if you don't sell them, there's no taxes. Okay? Anybody, when you have over $2,000 in your brokerage account, can take a low-interest margin loan. Now, a margin loan, you send it to your bank account, you didn't pay income taxes, so you actually avoided capital gains taxes because you didn't sell, and you avoided income taxes. You avoid having to work for that money, okay? You can reinvest that money into another asset, or you can just go spend it. It doesn't really matter. You can do whatever you want with that money, but you never sell. You just compound your assets for your entire life. Never sell them. It's amazing how fast you can build. So you can do this with stocks, ETFs, life insurance, real estate, cryptocurrency, precious metals. And I've been teaching it to, I don't know, over 600-700 people in the past 5 years. Anybody can do this. Buy, it's simple. You don't need a 529 or a 403B or a retirement account. All those things are ridiculous. The rich don't do that. They just fund a brokerage account. They buy it. They never sell it. They borrow from it, and when they die, they get a step-up in basis. You can pass up to $30 million to your family, 100% tax-free, just when you die. It's called a step-up, stepped-up basis on your assets. So there you go. Anybody can get rich. Anybody can start it. The problem is you're going to have to unlearn what you've been taught, though, because you've been taught by Wall Street and financial advisors, and unfortunately even the CPAs don't know how to do this strategy. It's pretty unfortunate.
And why is that, do you think? Just not part of their world?
It's interesting because my chief operating officer went to Edward McCaffrey's class. He's the guy who coined Bible or die. He coined the phrase, buy, borrow, die.
Oh, he's buy,
the
guy borrow, who, die. Okay.
Yeah, buy, borrow, die. He coined that phrase. But my friend AJ went to his class for finance in California. They never teach it. So they don't want to teach. Okay, so here's the thing. Just imagine a world where they taught all the financial advisors and CPAs the buy, borrow, die strategy. So all the financial advisors and CPAs would get financially free, and they would help their clients become financially free and pay no taxes. Now, do you think it's more likely the government did that, or do you think the government more likely wouldn't want to teach you that because they need to keep you working, paying taxes, they want to tax you to the grave, and Wall Street wants to turn your family into a multi-generational passive income stream? Mm-hmm. So which one's more likely?
Yeah, it does kind of, it's one of those things that writes itself, and your... the website where you can, you know, sign up for your classes and learn about this is theperfectportfolio.com, correct?
Yeah, and I don't think people should sign up for a course. I don't really need it. But they can. My book is $12. You can read it. $12, invest in your financial IQ. You can read the book. Don't believe it. Ask AI. I don't question it. I'm not telling people how to think. I'm just saying that the system that you've been taught is rigged.
Right, rigged. And so I guess for that, if you know, for the sometimes for the deprogramming, you might need to, you know, get a little more info.
Alternative info.
Yeah, you can. I mean, anybody can take my book, and you can just take each chapter and take a picture of it and throw it into AI and be like, "Is this guy full of it?" Oh, by the way, so I had the former Comptroller General. His name is David Walker. I needed a really big endorsement, so I figured, well, may as well get the former CPA for the United States. So David Walker just endorsed my book.
Hmm. Wow.
That is a pretty big endorsement. So what do you say when you call him? You're like, hey, I wrote a book that kind of throws everything that you know you've been part of into the trash bin. What do you think? And he's like, yes.
Well, no, he's very pro. He sees the problems going on. He sees the number of people that are going to fall into poverty in the future.
Yeah.
If I told you the numbers, you don't even want to think about it, and what that does to the country. Because the banks are selling you retirement accounts and all this crap, the stuff that you know rich people don't use, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's very concerned about that. He's very excited about financial literacy. We were talking because he, I know his. There's another guy named David McKnight. He's written some books. So me and David McKnight sort of know each other because we both write financial books and tax books. And so somehow through him, because I knew David McKnight, CPA, so I know David McKnight, CPA, and then they knew David Walker. So somehow through that connection, I was introduced to David Walker a couple of years ago. We just kept in touch, and then I wrote this book. I was like, hey, would you be interested in this? He goes, well, let me read it, and, you know, send me a copy. I'll read it. So a couple months later, he goes, you know what, here's my endorsement. He's like, I was on vacation. I read the rest of it. Everything looks great, so he endorsed it.
Nice. So if somebody's just starting and, I don't know, let's say they're 50. So they're still working. They're not a kid. They can't do the 5,000 a year and hit 13 million. How would you recommend they like launch this?
Okay. So pretty simple. My YouTube channel is P2L. Or the Perfect Portfolio P2L, you can look at it. Okay, there's a video on there. It's an overview for our company. You can watch that. You can message my team. We'll send you the first three videos for the course. There'll be 6 hours of instructional content. Just go to our website, theperfectportfolio.com. Say, hey, watch the whatever YouTube. We can send you three videos. You can watch that. You can learn it. You can fact check it. You can question it. Whatever. But there's also there's everything's in there on where you can set up the site for $100. You can put $100 in there. You just need to start investing. So the thing is about it, people have an emergency fund because like 6 to 12 months of money in an emergency fund. I'm like, that's ridiculous. You're making the bank wealthy, right? So, but you can invest. And then if you ever have an emergency, you can just press the borrow button, create money, send it to your bank account and pay for the emergency. So you're just focusing on investing for the rest of your life. You can do a covered call that pays a 12 to 14% dividend inside your brokerage account. Now, it's basically an ETF where they actually trade options for you inside of it, and anybody can do this. So you're basically making money. So The question is, when you ask somebody, how much money are you making when you're not working? Most people say, well, zero, right? I don't make any money.
Sure.
So even if you put $100 in that account and you make $14 a year, that's still better than nothing, right? Well, why not try and make $140 a year or $1,400 a year, right? Just keep investing in it so you never sell. You're going to reinvest all your dividends and just keep compounding your money into these brokerage accounts. You're building passive income when you're not working. All the growth is never taxable. It never will be taxable. When you press the borrow button, you didn't have to work that money. So you avoid having to work hard, and you avoid paying income taxes on the money. And you're using the strategies that billionaires. You could buy gold ETFs, silver ETFs, Bitcoin ETFs. You can buy whatever in that brokerage account. And you're going to get a lot of momentum because you can just keep buying forever and you never sell.
But now this is all based on picking the right stocks and making sure they make money, because if they don't make money, you're not making any money.
Okay, I mean I can read off my current portfolio, but I've got my portfolio. Every quarter I run a live class, and you can look at my portfolio.
You run a what?
I run a live class every 4 months. A live class, yeah, uh-huh. Live. It's got my current portfolio. I show it to my students. We talk it over. Students can learn. We give you all the tools to test things and see how they work. And if a person says, I just want more gold and silver ETFs, great, buy more gold and silver ETFs. You're the boss. You know what I mean? I'm not giving you financial advice here. I'm just saying, hey, here's a cool system. You can learn this and you can build wealth using the exact same strategies that created the billionaires in this country.
Nice. I just attached your YouTube channel to the page for today, so if somebody is like, I didn't have a pen, you can go there and plug it in. So it's pretty easy at YouTube, P like Paul, the number 2, and then wealth.
Yeah, so you can check that out. And again, if you buy the book, you're like, this is really cool. This is amazing. I'm learning, right? Then you're like, okay, I need a course. I've got a video course. It's like $600. Okay, is that going to be worth it? Yeah, you're going to learn the system of billionaires. If you're like, okay, I want a live course. You want to come in a live course? We actually analyze your finances and your personal situation. And now we have your goals and assets, and we can look at you. So we don't like debt. All debt is not created equal. We hate bad debt. Debt is only good when your debt makes you money, right? So
right.
We want you to eliminate bad debt, and you only use debt when it makes you money, okay? Whether it's buying real estate. I bought 2 properties in the last 2 years, my wife and I, and we bought it with debt. We didn't buy it with our money. Like, why would we bought it with a mortgage. We bought it with digital entries in a computer. And you're actually buying real estate with it's just digital entries in a computer. So I could go work hard for the money, or I can take on a mortgage and buy real estate with digital entries in a computer, and they're not taxed. So I prefer that. Because there's no money in the world. It's all digital entries in a computer. That's it.
Okay, so I'm still a little bit confused. I'm not very smart.
Okay.
Bill went to school. That's where you went wrong.
Okay, so
yeah,
I borrow money to buy property.
Yep.
That property now has a mortgage. Now, I have to realize a profit on that mortgage to pay the mortgage. Am I on the right track here?
Well, you do. Yeah, you have to have some sort of income for this strategy to work. But here's the distinction, is that when you get a mortgage, the bank literally gives you, okay, the house that I just bought in Tennessee. I moved from California to Tennessee 2 years ago. So the house that I just bought was $500,000. I just borrowed it. The bank gave me $500,000. I didn't have to work for it. I didn't have to pay taxes. And I got $500,000. I bought a house. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe I put $15,000 down. Well, now I'm making profit on $500,000. And even though I only put $15,000 down. Make sense? So I'm earning the rate of return on $500,000.
That's if the property, that's if the property goes up in value.
That's not a problem. I only buy real estate in low tax, higher desirable states where we have massive migration into that neighborhood.
Which explains why you left California.
Correct. That's why I got to California. I went to Knoxville, Tennessee. Guess where the number one place to buy real estate is right now for the next decade? Knoxville, Tennessee.
No fooling.
We're getting in it. they're getting the In-N-Out Burger. Well, Tennessee is the number one, and Knoxville is massive amounts of money is rolling into Knoxville right now.
Why? Just out of curiosity.
Nashville's gentrified, too expensive. It's like a Vegas now, Nashville. Yeah. Knoxville's kind of small. We got the University of Tennessee, Go Vols, right? Great restaurants. In-N-Out Burger's coming here, right? Thanks to Chris Rock. But Kid Rock. Kid Rock got us an In-N-Out Burger now, so that's In-N-Out Burger in Knoxville. Just massive amounts of money. It's beautiful weather here, not too cold, not too hot. For me, my brother lives in Canada, my sister lives in Florida. Right in the middle is Knoxville, Tennessee. So, the point is, I buy real estate that has, I can rent it on midterm rentals, the downstairs, I can pay my mortgage. But here's the thing, people go, all right, I'm going to pay off my mortgage. So they send an extra principal payment. Well, two things happen here. First of all, they paid off a debt that was at a very low interest rate. So they lost the opportunity cost of investing that money outside of their home, right? So that's a bad idea. So that's bad mistake number one, sending in extra principal payments. Two, the debt's disappearing even if you don't pay it off because the real estate's going down and the dollar is going down. It's losing value. So your debt is getting smaller even when you don't pay it off because the real estate goes down as the U.S. dollar the real estate goes up as the U.S. dollar. So even when you don't pay it off, it's getting smaller because the house is going up and the debt is going down. Three, when you pay off principal, you're actually paying more taxes. You're thinking, oh, I'm not getting, the bank's not getting that little bit of interest. But you didn't calculate that the government's taking more of that in taxes because you're reducing your deduction every time you make a principal. So you're actually paying more in taxes than you saved on the interest.
Hmm.
And then once your house is paid off, how are you going to buy another one? You got to borrow from that house to buy another one. Rich families don't get rich by paying off their homes. They buy houses with debt because they put $15,000 down, and then the return is based on the $500,000. Right. So if I make 10% rate of return, I make $50,000, but I only put $15,000 down. Right. I'm going to more likely borrow, as the house appreciates, I'll borrow another down payment and buy another real estate piece of real estate and do that again. That's how people get wealthy. Good debt and bad debt goes right to Robert Kiyosaki's books. But again, I read those books a long time ago. How do you do this? It's hard to get real estate, certainly in California and other places, but anybody can open up a brokerage account and do this. You put $20 in a gold ETF, $20 in a silver ETF, $20 in a covered call, $20 into Amazon, and $20 into Costco. Just buy things where you spend your money and you understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's simple.
So, let's see. How about, let's take a really quick break, and then we'll come back and finish out the hour. Our guest is Mark Kwan. Everybody's going, you should see us sitting here. There are three of us in here, and Alex is in the other room, and we're all nodding our heads going,
I know. But you know what? If I teach the homeschool kids, which I ran classes for age 9 to 18, they get it completely. They get it so fast, it's amazing. They literally, at speed of instruction, they haven't been programmed. That's why I like doing homeschool kids, because they do it immediately.
I've got
a 9-year-old who's going to be, the 9-year-old, he will become a billionaire. He's a little business owner. He already has a little business, and he's 9, and he does jobs for his parents around the house, earns money, and his parents will set him up for a brokerage account in their name, and he's using the Bible or that strategy at age 9. That kid will be a billionaire easy. Guarantee it. So, just your neuroplasty. What did you allow the industry, the financial service industry, the school, to make you believe? Right.
Yeah.
That's it. It's your programming. You're fighting it. You got to unlearn.
I know. So, they're living rent free in our heads. Duh. All right.
You have
2 minutes to unprogram everyone, and then we're coming back with our guest, Mark Kwan. He is the author of Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes. Today is March 15th, actually, if you want to find this show and we play it some later time. March 15th, 2026, you're listening to We the People, and you can find everything about all of this that we're talking about at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Sammy Joe and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do. They'd sit around the house, get high and watch a tune. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. They headed down to old El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big hassle. Billy Joe shot a man while robbing his castle. Bobby Sue took the money and run. Go on, take the money and run. Go on, take the money and run.
So that's the other way to earn money without working.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, terrible idea. Do not rob the castle. Bad idea. All right, so Alex has a question for you, Mark.
I do, Mark.
Sure.
First of all, this is brilliant. I'm going to look a lot more at your resources. I was joking earlier about abolishing the IRS, but how realistic is that? And Trump has said he wants to get rid of it, and I read about the book, The Creature of Jekyll Island. Just whatever your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, the Creature from Jekyll Island is spot on. We teach this stuff in actually the course, because we have to teach the children what's wrong with the system, right? Why it's failing us. Yeah, I mean, get rid of the IRS. I doubt it's going to happen. I highly doubt it. There's too many, I mean, it's like, why did they create the Federal Reserve? I mean, you just think about it. The system is crazy. They print pieces of paper and they print numbers on it. And they said, oh, that sounds good. That's money. Like, no, it's a piece of paper with a number on it. And they're like, oh, no, this one says 100 and that says 1. Oh, that's worth 100 times more than the other. We're like, okay, yep, that sounds good. Because we went to school, right? That's what we were taught to do with our neuroplasticity, right? Get us when they're younger. And then they go, and then they create 9 more as digital entries in a computer. Like, there's no money in your bank account right now. There's literally none. There's no money in your bank account. When you get a paycheck, it's digital entries in a computer.
Sure.
That's it. And we're like, we're working for digital entries in a computer, and then the government's printing more, which is stealing it through inflation. And then they manipulate the inflation rate. Shrinkflation. They have to make things smaller. 1980, they took food and energy out of it. Like, we're getting poorer very fast, and we should be getting richer. Buy below die builds your wealth for you. And when I buy real estate with debt, well, great. I don't know. The debt's going down because it's priced in U.S. dollar. It's just it's shrinking, right? And then my real estate goes up, you know, so you can make money with inflation. You're either a victim of inflation because you're saving and following those things and you're funding a 401k, or inflation is building your wealth tax-free.
So where are you with, gold, silver, precious metals investing?
Yeah, you can buy. I have a lot of people who come to me and say, hey, Mark, I got Ike. Huge investment. You can borrow against it. That's also in the book. There's chapters on gold and silver in there. There's chapters on Bitcoin in there. The easiest way to do it is just buy a Bitcoin ETF or a gold ETF or a silver ETF. That's cool. You can combine the strategies in there, you know? Just buy gold. So gold and silver ETFs or Bitcoin ETFs. There you go. You got your exposure, and it's very easy to take a low interest loan. So, it's a very simple system.
Bill only has one eyebrow right now. They're squeezed there.
They need complexity in the financial industry, right? They need to go, oh, you have to go get a financial advisor, right? And then who trades the financial advisor? And then they go, oh, wait, you can't handle the stealth. You need a 529 and a 457 and a 403B and a 401K and an IRA and a Roth IRA and a retirement account for self-employed. No, you don't. You need all that, throw all that garbage out the window. Get a brokerage account with a borrow button. There you go. You're doing exactly what the billionaires use. The computer will, that program we use actually is called M1 Finance. You can read about that in the book. The computer buys more of the things that are going down and less of the thing that's going up. It just does that automatically for you. You just fund it, and if gold's going down, it'll buy more gold. If gold's going up, won't buy it. If Bitcoin's going down, it'll buy some more Bitcoin. Whatever. If NVIDIA's going up, it'll stop buying NVIDIA. If NVIDIA goes down, we'll buy more of it. So the computer literally does it for you. It's all completely free, built within the program. Fully insured brokerage account, SIPC insured, Even their savings account is insured by the FDIC up to $4.75 million saved in your FDIC-insured savings account over there. So pretty cool.
Hmm.
Good stuff. All the resources are there. Simple. I can teach it to a nine-year-old.
How reliable profitable has it been to rely on AI to buy stocks?
I don't know. I've never really looked at that. I use AI to find stocks for certain. I can find stocks that way, right? Mm-hmm. So it's pretty good on that one because I can do it. I can find stocks that are similar and different earnings and things like that. So it's easy to find them. But I just run a course and I basically build a portfolio that I like. And then if somebody wants to put $100 in it and they learn, they could add money to it. Or they can, as they start learning more, they can say, look, I want to explore exposure to Bitcoin or gold or silver. They can do that on their own, and then they know how to do it. They don't need me anymore. My company objective is to raise your financial IQ, teach you to fish, so you don't need a financial advisor anymore, and then automate your income. So anybody can build passive income on their iPhone. Hey, start with any amount and just keep funding it. You're gonna make money when you're sleeping, whether you want to or not.
Yeah, I wasn't aware you could buy a brokerage account for $100. That's
yeah,
new.
Not only that, it's not $100. You can do that, but you can actually put $20 into a covered call ETF. This is a super complex options trade. They do it inside the ETF. You just buy it, and you're making money when you're sleeping. And by the way, dividend income is taxed, but it's taxed way less than working. I mean, probably half the taxes of working. Mm-hmm. You're making money when you're working. The growth of the account is never taxed as long as you don't sell. So I just buy forever. I never sell. I reinvest all the dividends. I'll never touch it. It's going to compound forever. And if I need cash, I can take a low interest margin loan and invest in my business. That would be a double tax deduction because that's money that isn't taxed, which creates a tax deduction. Now I'm getting double tax deductions. Right? Now, when you're an accredited investor, if you know what the definition of accredited investor, it means if you have a net worth of over $1 million outside of your primary residence, or you make $200,000 a year over 2 years, or $300,000 a year over 2 years, there's tax codes that open it up where you could even live in California and not pay taxes on your W-2 income if somebody's an accredited investor. So you got to, invest in assets, build up your net worth to $1 million, and there's some very cool stuff that we can only offer to accredited investors. So I've got clients who are new to investing. They start with $100. Most people do. And then I also help a lot of people who have, some people have $2 million in their retirement account and they realize they owe taxes on $2 million at regular income tax rates. And they go, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you say you buy, but you never sell. So let's say you own some stocks. Doing great. They're making money. And then all of a sudden, they start going down and down and down. You still don't sell?
Nope. You just buy forever.
No, but I mean, those stocks that are now not performing.
Yeah, don't buy bad stocks. Don't buy like,
Well, that's great advice.
Probably start with the top 10 of the S&P 500. That's probably a good place to start. Or ask AI, what's the best upcoming energy company in the country that's making lots of money? You can ask. Anybody can learn this stuff. I mean, you have AI. You have the most powerful tool in the world to learn any topic in a fraction of the time, and people aren't doing it. So you have the Bible or Die strategy. You got a $12 book, and you have AI. And you have a company where you can put $100 in, and the computer will buy more of the things that are going down. If you put $50 a week in there, it's going to buy more of the stocks that are going down. You have a covered call ETF. It's a complex options trade where they do the options trading. You do nothing, and it can generate an income stream for you. So anybody can get wealthy. Anybody can build passive income stream. Anybody can avoid taxes, and anybody can use the strategy that billionaires use.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I remember years ago, there was a guy, he was talking about the retirement accounts, and the way he referred to it, he said, deferred, retirement. He said basically it's, you're banking on being in a lower tax bracket when you retire than you are when you work, because you're banking on your own failure. And it was like,
it's much worse than that, because in real inflation's around 5% or whatever. So if you're getting 8% return on your retirement account, it's only going to keep you working. Okay. Now let's say that somebody who's talking is on this call and they project they're going to have $1 million in a retirement account, right? In 10 years. Okay. Like, I'm going to have $1 million in my retirement account in 10 years. I'll be awesome to retire. And they're at 65 with $1 million. Well, after inflation, you really cut that about in half, okay, for the real inflation rate. So you don't have half, you don't have a million, you have 500. There's the 4% rule, which is the rule, how much income you can collect. They had to recalculate that in a 3.3%. So on your 500,000, you get to retire on $18,000 a year with $500,000 in a retirement account 10 years from now.
Yeah, that's going to be...
That's the math.
You're going to be thin.
That's the math, $18,000 a year. Yeah, and then Social Security... Oh, wait, they're like, oh, it's going to run out of money. It used to be 2035, then it's 2033. But wait, here's the kicker. That's if the current job, that's if everyone's paying into the system.
Right.
Okay? If all the people that are not working now because of AI stop paying into the system, Social Security is going to run out of money like in 2030. We're talking right around the corner. So if you have $18,000 a year in your 401k and Social Security is cut, what are you going to do? And this is a person who has $1 million. I'm a millionaire at age 65, 10 years from now. These are the actual numbers. So people need to know this, and they need to change it, or they're going to be in big trouble. So some people are going to get scared. Some people are going to say, I should probably do something about this and spend the time to learn this stuff. I say you need to learn at least, spend an hour a day for the next 365 days and learn it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I say. You got to...
And there's no like, oh, your ship has sailed, too late, sorry, it's too bad you didn't call us sooner, right? No, you start
absolutely
whenever.
Not. No, because you're trying to replace, just imagine $1 million in a retirement account. You don't need that much to generate anywhere near that amount in a brokerage account, because that assumes you sell and you trigger taxes. But if you just never sell and you buy forever, it compounds forever. The best thing ever is a down market. Because you're buying more. You hope that the market crashes.
Yeah, it seems like at some point it always comes back, doesn't it?
It always comes back. If you're buying an index fund, which is the S&P 500 covered call, it's the S&P 500. But you also have to stop listening to the news. You do.
That's just good advice in general.
That's a whole other one. No, just generally. Okay, so think about this. The news makes money spreading fear. They do. The more scary the story is, the more people watch it, the more revenue they make. So they spread fear. Right?
Sure.
Wall Street likes to spread fear, too, because they're buying up all the stocks that you're selling when you're panic selling. Okay. During coronavirus, I was making videos like, this is all, I was like, I don't know what this is, but I don't believe what it is. Okay. And I was like, okay, you need to buy and invest. So I went on my Instagram, started telling people what to buy. So at least I said, hey, look, this is what I'm buying. You're welcome to do the same. And a lot of people made a lot of money following my Instagram during coronavirus. That's when I started the Perfect Portfolio, because I was like, well, all my speaking engagements canceled. Well, what am I going to do now? So I started a financial education company. And at the time, I was borrowing interest rate on margin was 2%. Imagine borrowing money at 2% interest on margin and avoid income tax. And I was buying a covered call that paid 12%. So my covered call in the S&P was paying 12, and I was borrowing at 2%. I was like, this is easy.
Okay, well, I'm just going to confess right now, we weren't doing that. We were not panicking. We were not wearing masks. We were talking smack about it, but
Talking smack about it from the day I saw it.
Where the heck was Kimberly back then? Why didn't she send us you back then? We could have been so much busier. Look at the time that's gone by. Boo.
Yeah,
so we're into the last minute, and I stink at this part. This is my worst part. After 15 years, I still stink at it, because I always run out of time and forget to thank the person. So we have time left, like a little bit, but I just wanted to thank you and let people know. Let's see, our guest, Mark J. Kwan. His book is Be Smart, Pay Zero Taxes. The website is theperfectportfolio.com. YouTube channel, P, letter P like Paul, or perfect, the number 2, and wealth. So you can go find all that stuff out, and then you too can spend the rest of the day with one eyebrow just like Bill. We'll get him the book, though. We'll get it all squared away. Mark, we're going to have you back on if that's cool with you.
Yeah, read the book and let's go for a deep dive if you want.
All right, we will. And so I thought, well, since we were, you know, releasing the hounds, I had a little song for you going out. So we will talk to Mark next time. You're listening to We the People. Stick with us. We're talking about gas the next hour. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
It was nice, the party was pumping.
Hey, yeah.
And everybody having a ball. Until the fellas got the name calling. And the girls responded to the call.
Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And if you missed the first hour, well, we can't possibly recap it. It basically is everything you learned about financial education, and then you squash it up and throw it in the garbage.
Yeah.
Do it the other way. Really, you ought to go back and listen. So just by way of reminding people, actually, all of the archives on our site at WeThePeopleRadio.us, all of the archives are free to listen to. They are uninterrupted, a.k.a. the free enterprise moments have been exempted. And we hope you make use of them. They're free to download, share, do whatever you want with them. I don't copyright anything. The website, you can take whatever you want off of it. I'm not going to send you one of those weird letters like I get every now and then. One of our South Africa shows, they sent me a letter, wanted $10,000 because I used the image of, I don't know, some guy in Africa. And it was like, okay, yeah, no. So go ahead and use our stuff. We don't care. We do.
And they'll send you the letter for $10,000.
We do it so that you can get smarter. So this particular topic on the gas crisis in California, Nevada, Arizona is, of course, going to be a contagion because it'll involve...
Soon go to Oregon, Washington, the whole West Coast.
It'll involve everyone else. But we have been talking about this a lot. So before you go, oh, no, are they talking about that again? Yeah, we're talking about it again. Because now the Defense Production Act is in play. So this is kind of like a, I don't know, it's like a slow moving train a little bit, but it's going a lot faster, I think, than most people would be comfortable with. Our guest is Mike Ariza. We only have Mike on today, not Professor Miche or Stan Ellis, but their information is on the multiple shows. This is actually part six of this kind of series about the oil and gas issue. But I've linked the article, today's article, President Trump invokes energy emergency law to restart California offshore oil, written by Katie Grimes in the California Globe, and that is right on the page for today, March 15, 2026. We've created a domain for this to push out the information so it's all in one place for you, and that is at gascrisis.org, and that gives you a bunch of video, lots of printed material, all of the previous radio programs, the bios of our guests. It's very credible information. And if you look at the letters, and they're also printed on there, we're going to talk about those. I'm sure they'll be referenced. Chevron, PBF, Marathon have all written letters to the California Air Resources Board. And in that, they cite the paper, the comprehensive analysis that was submitted by our three serial guests, we'll call them. That paper is the one that those corporations have referenced. So this is something that we should all be like watching and pounding on the government for. And this is not the Iran conflict. That's what's coming out through the news is California gas prices are going up because of that. But let's see. We'll ask our guest Mike Ariza. Who is a veteran. Thanks for that, Mike. Thank you for your service. And was the senior plant operationer, is the senior plant operating engineer at California State University, Chico. So I don't even know what that entails, but it's It's beyond my pay grade. And he was the control board operator at Flying J. He was environmental controls and senior refinery technician at the Exxon Valero Benicia refinery. So he's done all of this stuff. This is not something he read in a book or saw on a YouTube. He is on the YouTube, actually. We've got lots of video of you. So good afternoon, Mike, and we'll just let you take it away.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having me on again.
Of course.
Yeah, we're the Defense Production Act was invoked for Sable to be able to start pumping crude oil off of its three platforms, Heritage, Hondo, and Harmony, up the Santa Barbara coast. They will, in fact, start pumping oil back into the state, which when I ran Valero, we used to receive their oil as part of the crude oil slate that we actually ran. So that's a step in the right direction. Unfortunately, it's not going to do us a damn bit of good to pump oil into our state if we don't have refineries to refine
exactly
crude oil. Yes.
Yeah. No.
Well, right now, given the state's track record, I wouldn't even call it even money to say those other six refineries that Chevron, PBF, and Marathon represent will still be online within a year or so from now. And if they go down, we're in Mad Max.
Because what's that leave us, one?
Yeah, and then they'll shut down. That's the Valero refinery at Wilmington. They're not going to stay open.
No. Well, you had you had mentioned on a previous show, you had a picture of a Valero station in Southern California. What was the price at the pump there?
Oh, that was Chevron, and then Arco was $10.26 a gallon.
Yeah, $10.26. Yeah, so that's coming our way. It won't. It'll just creep up the coast eventually. $10.26 a gallon. Man, what are people going to do when they roll up and have to pay $10-$12 a gallon for gasoline, and they got to commute? You know, that's.
Well, the big mistake is they'll think, well, once this whole, first of all, they'll be mad about the Iran thing, and they'll think that once that is done, that everything will go back to normal. But that isn't in the cards, because that's not what's causing it.
Yeah, Aaron and Bill, that's correct. The thing is, there's a couple things. We predicted that Valero was going to go down 3 months early, and it did. It went down January 31st. That's when they pulled crude oil feed from the crude unit. After that, every unit just cascades down offline. So Valero's been offline since January 31st, and as soon as they went offline, prices in California started to go up. I think before the Iran war hit, we were looking at 80 to 90 cent a gallon increases in California. No place else in America, just California. And the reason for that is the fact that all these fuel oil tankers, not crude oil tankers, fuel oil tankers, jet, diesel, gasoline, the state has pretty much reached its limit with its infrastructure on its ability to offload those tankers. And in our discussions, myself, Professor Miche, and Assemblyman Ellis, we were concern that California had indeed reached that critical point where we couldn't handle anymore. And once Valero went down 4.3 million gallons a day of gasoline, 1.2 to 1.4 million gallons a day of jet fuel and diesel, once that went offline, prices started going up. That was before the Iranian war started.
Mm-hmm.
Once the Iranian war started, there's a couple things there. California, as you know, in discussions with Professor Miche, and you know, we import 70% of our crude oil, not fuel oil, crude oil. And of that, 30% of it comes from the Middle East. That's far higher than any place in our whole country. So you get that effect. In addition, the restrictions in the Strait of Hormuz are reducing the amount of crude oil that's going to the Asian countries that are refining crude oil to make our fuel. So we're getting basically a double whammy. In addition, China is now producing our fuel, some of our fuel, a percentage of it. And Beijing basically told all of its refineries no more gasoline and diesel exports for right now. So they've totally shut those off. So we're getting hit from all sides, where the rest of the country, again, it's going up in the rest of the country, prices are, because of the Iranian war now, but not like they are here in California.
Yeah, it's kind of given the decision makers in California cover. I mean, because the Democrats in the legislature and the governor absolutely have been telling everybody this isn't a thing. And, well, we all know.
I talked to a lady with ABC News, you know, we've been going back and forth, and I said, you know, you guys, all the, you know, up and down L.A., San Francisco, you guys keep reporting Valero's. Well, Valero's going down in April. No, they went down. They've been down. And the prices started going up because they went down. They're not reporting that. Those prices at 80 or 90 cents a gallon initial in February that our gas prices went up has nothing to do with the Iranian war. It has to do with the fact that we cannot keep up with the amount of fuel that's being brought in here. And if those other refineries go down, we're not going to be able to find the fuel. We're not going to be able to offload it. We're just going to have situations where, you know, cities have 3 or 4 days of food supply. It's a matter of simple logistics. If you don't have diesel to get these trucks, to get food into the cities, to get, you know, agriculture, emergency vehicles, all that stuff, the Chevron CEO said that they make 60%, Richmond Refinery makes 60% of San Francisco's jet, and then PBF in their letters say they make 40% of San Francisco's jet. My math says that's 100% of San Francisco's jet fuel that will be offline. So, you know, that's going to translate to Oakland, San Jose, Sacramento, LAX, and, of course, all of our military installations will be...
So how much refined fuels, let's say gasoline, how much comes in a tanker across the ocean? What do they hold?
I don't know exactly what they hold, honestly, Bill. I know we're importing about 42% of the gasoline that we should be making is being imported.
Yeah.
We're almost to half.
Yeah. I'm just curious how many tankers we're going to have to get in to offset what these refineries aren't putting out.
That's the problem. They're not available. When I went to pick my wife up when she came back from Guangzhou, there were like 7 or 8 tankers anchored out there. Out there in San Pablo Bay, running their engines, running their generators, you know, smoking onto the atmosphere,
waiting to unload.
Waiting to unload. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah,
that's the problem. You could have 30 tankers. You'd have 30 tankers out there. You know, which there's not that many tankers out there. That's another problem. The ability to make that much more fuel. You're talking 700,000 barrels a day of crude oil that would go offline with those four refineries, or I'm sorry,
right.
Six refineries. You could have tanker after tanker out there, but you can't offload them.
Doesn't do anybody any good.
Doesn't do any good. It's just a bunch of tankers out there.
Yeah. Well, you're right, though, on the diesel fuel. If we can't get diesel fuel into California, you're going to have chaos because you're not going to be able to get products to the retailers, and I'm talking grocery stores, electronics, I mean everything, gets delivered by truck, and that's diesel fuel. And if they have those products on board and they have to go to California and they can't get diesel, they're not coming. You know,
that's correct.
That's just not going to be available. It won't be high prices. It'll be a shortage.
Yes, sir.
And that's, I think, people need to know that. You're going to start seeing empty shelves because the shortage of diesel.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. You know, it's basically shutting down the port of Los Angeles, you know.
You got no
fuel for ships going in. You get ships trying to offload, then going out. You don't have fuel for them to get underway. You don't have diesel to run all the different equipment that runs at the port. You don't have diesel for the trucks to haul stuff, groceries, and the like. Like I said, cities, and realistically, I've been, I podcast a couple times now, but Friday with retired Brigadier General Blaine Holt, and he's incredibly sharp. C-17, KC-135 pilot. He was high up in NATO, worked a lot of logistics during his time within his career in the Air Force. And, he just flat out said it's simple logistics. And, you know, city's got 3 or 4 days of food, logistics. You can't get it there. And yes, it will be nothing but chaos up and down the state, the whole West Coast. And this translates to the whole country. That's where the problem
sure does.
is. You, You compromise the West Coast, then you compromise in the whole country. And then you get people like Katie Grimes, just wonderful investigative reporter, writer, just phenomenal. We all know that. You know, she's writing, looking at the connection now and finding out that China, environmental policies from China are what is being used by our Air Resource Board to put out their policies on our refineries. From Tsingtao University, which is also where Xi Jinping went, she's confirmed there's Chinese policies that are being looked at and used to determine what our policies are.
Hmm.
She wrote about that.
I didn't think China had any air quality restrictions.
They don't for them.
Yeah, for them. Exactly.
But hey, if we were going to take over the West without firing a shot,
cripple the refineries, their economic
what
system.
What a tricky idea. We have to take a swift break here, but when we come back, Mike, let's do a, the elevator speech on why. That there are no pipelines coming in. Like, for people that are just kind of coming in on this idea that are going, well, that's silly. They'll do, you know, all the myriad of things that we hear. And the fact that those things are not available to us, maybe you could disabuse them of their happy thoughts. Meanwhile, we will play It's the End of the World for you, just so you can get in the mood for that segment coming up.
All right.
And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Credit that to Bob Martin.
Nice. I might be a little off base here, but Mike, I have a quick question. I've heard of people using used cooking oil as a replacement for gas. Is there anything to that?
No.
Hey, you're not Mike.
That's one of the things you're using to manufacture the renewable diesel.
Interesting.
Yeah, fat, soybean oil, and like fat lard and used cooking oil. They're using that they're refining that into the renewable diesel.
Renewable diesel. You know, years ago, we were down in Long Beach. We stayed in a hotel down there that was, oh, I don't know, three or four blocks from the Long Beach harbor, and where they unload all the containers. And I don't know how many people have actually seen that operation down there, but I was amazed at how many thousands and thousands of containers they handle, loading and unloading off these big ships. But when they, you know, they've got these big cranes that lift them off and set them down onto a little trolley that a little truck, diesel truck grabs it and takes it out in the yard, and then a forklift unloads it and puts. I mean, it's a huge operation.
Yeah.
Unless those big cranes are electric, from the cranes to the trucks that move the containers, all run on diesel.
Yeah.
And you know, if you don't have, you know, we talk about no jet fuel. Well, if you don't have any diesel, the things that's going to impact, it's everything. It's everything.
Long Beach and the Port of Los Angeles, defective country. Stuff goes into our country, not just California.
Right. Yeah, that's where they
that's true. We can't just hog the entire port just so we can get gas because we're too stupid to use the oil we have under our feet.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a huge operation, and I'm not exaggerating when I say thousands and thousands of containers every day go in and out of there. And you know, a lot of them go out on rail. Well, I got news for you. Trains run on diesel too. They run their big electric generators on diesel. If they can't get diesel, trains aren't going to run either. So it's serious.
It's Thunder. Yes, it's Thunderdome.
Yes, it's like I said, a total economical collapse. Going back to Aaron's question before the break, what California, you know, America is the envy of the world, and California used to be the envy of America. California has the fifth largest oil reserves. California used to produce so much oil that we exported crude oil. This is quite a while ago, but that's a fact. We used to actually export crude oil. We were definitely self-sustaining. And California, if people listening can think, it's set up like its own country. It didn't need pipelines coming in to the state, so no pipelines have ever been built coming into the state, because California has always had its own crude oil. California has always had more than sufficient refineries to take care of itself, along with Arizona and Nevada. So we've always had that ability. And California has almost, for decades, 100 years plus, has acted like its own country, its own self-sustaining country, and done really well with the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world. But these policies have that the governor, Herdale, has threw in here, and this air board that's getting their policies from China on what to do with our refineries, it's totally destroying that. We're going to go from the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world to the largest economical disaster in the history of the United States. And that's all because California was built with the infrastructure to take care of itself and take care of itself well, handle its own needs. Now, and it's not even with these refineries that are still running, with them threatening to shut down the six refineries. We're in a terrible state right now. Our military right now is at a terrible risk. Right now, not later. So right. It's imperative. It's absolutely imperative now that they invoke the Defense Production Act to protect our refineries, or we're going to go off a cliff.
Yeah, it's the refineries that's, I mean, you're right. I mean, I'm glad that he opened up the offshore drilling, but not going to really help if we get all this oil in here and we can't do anything with it. You know, we can't refine it.
Well, yeah. So I just was looking at the article, and I have linked that on today's deal. It is called President Trump Invokes Emergency Law to Restart California Offshore Oil. So U.S. Secretary of Energy Chris Wright Friday directed Sable Offshore Corporation to restore operations of the San Ynez unit and the pipeline system. That was March 14th, 2026. So that, you know, and basically it explains the presidential directives issued under congressional authority carry the force of federal law and may override conflicting state regulations. The Pipeline and Gas Journal explains that an order issued as an exercise of congressionally delegated authority or the president's constitutional powers has the force of federal law under the Supremacy Clause and may preempt contrary state law. Well, we have like lots of contrary state stuff going on here, and if they don't override that, like here later in her article, she says, most California residents know that California's self-inflicted gasoline crisis is not only increasing prices at the pump, but increasing dependency on foreign oil suppliers and shippers to supply fuels to the Golden State. California's self-inflicted gas crisis is also a direct threat to the U.S. military force readiness on the West Coast.
So, yes, and Chevron and Marathon both cite that. They both cite our report, which refers directly to military readiness. They cite that. You know, Newsom said it's a bunch of, you know, bull. No, Governor, you're a bunch of bull. This is a real problem. America is threatened, and it threatens the United States. It actually threatens the entire. You take the West Coast down, what they're doing.
Well, yeah, even in this article, it reminds Arizona gets nearly half of its gas from California, and the vast majority of Nevada gas, 88%, I thought it was 80, it's 88% comes from California.
Yeah, and I look at those percentages, Aaron, and I say, okay, what's the bottom line? Reno and Vegas have nothing. They have no seaports. They rely on our pipelines.
Yeah.
Pipeline coming from south to Vegas and the pipeline from Sacramento running up to Reno. They have nothing. They have no other way,
no
rail, no trucks, no nothing.
No. And California, Nevada, and Arizona have 40 military bases and installations. California is home to 32 of those 40. And it cites Stan Ellis, the assemblyman that's been on with us. In October, Assemblyman Ellis told the Globe that California military bases could end up running out of jet and aviation fuels should a military conflict unfold, because Governor Newsom's political policies are resulting in shockingly detrimental and lethal regulations for the oil and gas industry. I mean,
yes.
This is not a what if. This isn't a Agenda 2030 slow creep. This is at the door. Wolves at the door.
It's now.
Well, there was something else that floated through my head, and then I saw that thing about Stan. But I know your town hall. Talk about that. We posted that on gascrisis.org. It's the top thing on that page. And it is a town hall that you are doing in Chico. I realize if people don't live in Chico, they might not want to go to it, but you have ways for them to participate.
Yeah, yes. We got a limited number on Zoom, but a few students in Chico were talking about it, and I struck up a conversation with them, and they're really interested, needless to say. You know, they're seeing what's going on, and a few of them got together and reserved a room in the BMU building at Chico State. So on April 2nd at 5:30, we're going to have a town hall there. Professor Miche and Assemblyman Ellis will be on via Zoom. And then I think there's up to 100 participants we can have on Zoom. And we're going to discuss, you know, I'm just going to do an introduction, and we're going to go over kind of the history from the 80s briefly up to where we are today, between the three of us. And then, we're going to field any questions that, folks have that are actually attending on site, and, or try to go ahead and get questions in that folks have on Zoom. So this is going to be kind of the first town hall we've done on this. I'm hoping some of my friends here that I work with at the campus, they really want to see this expand. So hopefully we'll be able to do something down in Sacramento, maybe even go down south, towards L.A. But yeah, just to get the word out, because so many people, they just don't know. Now they're seeing the prices screaming up. Kind of going, what the heck's going on? Well, this is what's going on.
But it's happening just like we thought it would, though. That what people are thinking is, look at Trump did it. And then what'll be the thing, right? If he invokes, invoking Defense Production Act, now he's acting like a king. And you can hear all this narrative, and honestly, even those of you who just hate the guy and think he does everything wrong, you really need to take a look at this, because that isn't what's going on. This exists outside of that.
Even what's going on was part of what we were predicting. We predicted Valero shut down. We predicted the gas prices to start going. We also, if you have storms that can impact tankers coming in, a problem at the Port of Los Angeles, like the cargo tank ship that caught on fire, any type of world event that could occur, which is in fact occurring now. All of those things could especially cripple California, because California is extremely vulnerable compared to the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, these were all things that we knew was going to happen with Valero. And, you look at the events that have occurred with Iran and the Strait of Hormuz, and again, not nearly as much as the rest of the country is not nearly as affected as California is, because California has set itself up in this vulnerable position that we're in.
Stan, back in the late 70s.
No, it's Mike.
What?
It's Mike.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Did I say stand?
I can do my stand, though.
Okay.
I can do my stand. Go
can
ahead.
You stand? Can you channel stand for us?
Yeah, do that. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, we had a gas shortage. And we came out of it. I mean, it was a, kind of a short-lived thing, but we came out of it. What's the difference between then and now?
The difference between then and now is we had 41 refineries in California to get us back out of it. That was a crude oil shortage. That was a crude oil embargo.
Mm-hmm.
So once the crude oil was restored, the whole country and California had the refineries to start refining again and get the country off of its knees. Now, if we end up in a shortage, which we're there right now, but when we get into a critical shortage, we can't get ourselves out of it. We don't have the refineries to recover. We'll stay in a shortage, and it will be long-lived and long-term.
Right. And these refineries that are going down, you know, let's say Trump invokes the federal government to come in. All right, restart those refineries.
You can't really do that.
Yeah, you can't. But how long would it take if they said, all right, we're going to restart them?
It depends on how long the refinery's been down. And like we had talked before, you got different things. So this refinery now is going into mothball. It's not going into turnaround. So all of their intermediate tanks, which provide hydrocarbon to the heavier processing units, they're empty. Normally you would have material in those tanks to help restart those units. Normally you would have crude oil in the crude oil tanks. As a matter of fact, they would be full waiting to restart the refinery. So all these tanks are grain. These units that do cracking and conversion where they'll have catalysts, they would normally have catalysts, new catalysts ready on site, dump the old catalyst, replace the new catalyst to come back up. Same thing with like the coker at Benicia, the fluid coke. Normally you'd have fluid coke in the coke silos, and then they would push it back to the unit to restart. Well, it's all gone. Everything's all gone.
Because when you say turnaround, you mean, because some of this is industry chatter that we don't know. So when you say, you know, they're mothballed, that means they're closing to close. But turnaround would be...
Turnaround means they're doing the maintenance that they have to do, and they'll make improvements.
And they do that anyway. That's like a normal thing.
They do that anyway. But that's another thing, you know, when you're going to... You're going to spend $200-$700 million on a turnaround. Well, with all this coming on, you're not going to do that. PBF's going down right now. One of the refineries is shortly, but they're just doing minimum what they got to do. They're not doing, you know, a turnaround could cost up to $1 billion depending on what they're doing. There's one when I was there where they did a lot of stuff. They changed out an entire tower, a column, put a brand new one in place. Rented the cranes to do it with. It was a 1 million-pound lift for that tower. It depends on what they're doing, but in the mothball state, just shutting down, then all these things that you would have in place to restart the refinery are no longer in place. And then most important of all things is the qualified people that are no longer on site to restart the refinery.
Mm-hmm.
All of the refineries are complex to restart. The Valero refinery is the most complex to restart. All those people are gone. They're gone. And you're not going to, you know, they go to Texas, they go to Louisiana, or they just retire, you know. You're not going to get very many of them that are want to come, you know, hey, you come back and help us with this. You know, they're in Louisiana. No, I'm done. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not coming back to Cali.
So they may never restart.
Yeah. It's hard. It would be really hard. You're not definitely not, if you lose a refineries en masse like the other six that may go down, with Valero down and with Phillips 66 down and Wilmington, you're not going to restart them all at the same time. It's going to take time. You'll have to bring them up one or at the most two at a time, and you're looking at months for each one.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation we're in. We get into a shortage, which we're already there. We're right on the precipice of it. When we go into shortages and those other refineries go down, then we can't recover ourselves out of it like we did back in the 70s.
Yes. On that cheerful note, take one more quick break, and then we'll... No, it's okay. It's been a whole day filled with, like, kind of bad news a little bit. Trying to make up for our bad news with some fun songs. I have one for the governor. I was... listening to the radio the other day, and I said to myself, This would be a terrific song about for the governor on one of our shows. So we'll go out with that, and you'll all know it. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Feeling better now that we're through. Feeling better because I'm over you. I learned my lesson and left a scar. Now I see how you really are. You're no good, you're no good. Baby, you're no good. I'm going to say it again. You're no good, you're no good. Baby, you're no good.
We gotta get out.
Linda Ronstadt and the Animals, they'll tell us everything we need to know.
I'm out of here.
The roadmap for the future. But, you know, seriously, on a political note, if people are not understanding what's happening with this, this is, I mean, I realize it's hardcore partisan and, you know, that makes me bad, but it's the Democrats that have done this, honestly. And if we do not pick a Republican governor, and I know everybody's busy, you know, clutching their pearls. Oh, so and so knelt for BLM. That was a lie, by the way. You know, this happened, that happened, the other thing happened. It's like, okay, we have only ever in the history of mankind have had one perfect person, and we killed him. So we're not really good with perfection. We don't need a perfect person. We just need somebody who isn't part of the ruling party in Sacramento. We need somebody who will not sign their bills and someone who will rein in the bureaucracy, because we are currently living under the tyranny of term limits where the bureaucrats run the state. California Air Resources Board, the Council on Environmental Quality, we've just... Like little FYI, though, on the bottom of every page, if you go to gascrisis.org, on the bottom of the video page, on the bottom of the media articles page, and the front page with the documents and the letters from the oil companies, the refiners, I mean, I have links to the California Air Resources Board, the California Environmental Quality Act, there's a link there to that, and the California Energy Commission. You have all three of those there. Go read what they want for you, just in case you were curious or that think we're making this up. This is a policy-driven nightmare that we're living.
Well, I know I had a little fellow stop by the store the other day and inspected our air compressor and slipped us a bill for $200. He just wanted to make sure we had a permit posted by the air compressor, and it was running right, which I think I'm able to fix it if it's not running right. But yeah, here, that's $200. Thank you very much. Like, wow.
Fundraising at its best.
Yes, they have their hands in everything, California.
Oh, they really do. I mean, we pay the highest in everything, property taxes, energy, just our energy costs besides fuel. Yep. Just outrageous.
Yep. And this, I hope I'm wrong, but I have a feeling this gas thing is going to bring this state to its knees, and there will be chaos because there's so many people, you know, a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck, and when all of a sudden you go from $4 or $3 a gallon for gas to $10, $12 a gallon for gas, people can't pay it. So what are you going to do?
No, they can't pay it. And then, you know, when you go and it's like 10 to 9, 8, 9, whatever the price ends up being, and you don't have any.
Yeah.
You don't have it. That's a whole different can of worms there. It's, you know, when we had the toilet paper shortages, we saw what that did. This will just, it's going to be chaotic. It's going to be,
Bill didn't have a toilet paper shortage because his wife lives in a perpetual state of end of the world preparation. And so my focus on Thunderdome left us in great position for that. But so, Mike, from a volume standpoint, because honestly, none of us look at oil and gas really like on an ongoing basis. But in this article that Katie wrote, Secretary Wright said Sable's facility can produce approximately 50,000 barrels of oil per day, which is a 15% increase to California's in-state production. It can only replace nearly 1.5 million barrels of crude each month. So that's still not enough. And what are we going to do with it?
No, it's not, because the remaining refineries online process about 850,000 barrels a day. So that kind of tells you that's a third of the rate that Valero ran at.
Really?
Valero ran around 150,000 barrels a day. So you're about a third of what Valero used to do. Same thing with the Phillips 66 down there in Wilmington. So you're looking at. It helps. I'm certainly not saying it's a step in the wrong direction. It is the fact that they told California, the environmental groups and everything else, to pack sand, okay, that's good. This evil that's got this state, got a hold of this state and this government, anything that can counteract and fight that, of course, is a good thing. But, again, the main thing is the refineries. That is, I don't understand why the energy secretary is not talking to President Trump. I mean, is President Trump in a year now go, hey, what the heck happened to all the California refineries? Why are they all down?
It looks like they are. I mean,
they are, but when the other six out of seven go down.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how that works exactly. I mean, if they override the regulation, I don't know, just based on all the different people that you've been speaking with on this issue, do you think they would stay temporarily?
Well, it goes back to something you brought up a couple times, Aaron, is the legislation has to come with the override, the legislation long term, has to come with the invocation of the Defense Production Act and the Supremacy Clause. That legislation has to come with it so they see it long term. If they can get that, if they can tell the refiners, including Valero, because Valero can still come back up, it's a little difficult, but they still can, basically tell them, okay, the Air Resource Board, California Energy Commission, all these different agencies, all their different rules, they no longer apply. You're under federal EPA. The CARBOB blend, it no longer applies. We're going to be under the United States clean fuels. Then you're going to produce that gasoline. These other things, they don't apply anymore. They're not a part of you. But they'll have to convince these refiners, including Valero, that, okay, like you have mentioned at least twice, Aaron, spot on, too. Like, you got to make sure this isn't going to turn around 2 or 3 years from now.
Yeah,
it has
right.
to become law. It has to become law. So they know that, well, okay, now we're in here, we can make some money again, certainly not hemorrhage money, and we can run reliably and run to the best of our ability and good conscience and not be harassed over every single little thing we do. And it's like Stan described one time when he was talking with you. He says, you know, it's like you got a highway patrolman following you everywhere you go. Well, I mean, it was a good analogy.
Yeah.
You know? That's the truth. So if you can convince.
But it's worse than that, because it's a highway patrolman following you, but not one that's watching for you to break the law. Just one that has nobody else to follow and a ticket quota to make. And, you know, you just add in all those things, right? So you don't even have to violate anything. They're on them. It's just not a friendly place to do business. I think everyone is kind of aware of that. That isn't a new idea. But I'll tell you what,
like
in 2026, if we don't make a change, if people don't step up and show up and make a change, we'll have to, you know, play the animal song and get out of this place, honestly.
No.
Honestly.
I was reading an article the other day about energy costs and which states have the highest energy costs, and I think Florida was one of the lowest. I think it was $135 per household on average. And California was the highest, and it comes in at a whopping $312 average electricity cost. That's a lot, and that's, you know, we pay a lot to live in California, and I think we're kind of like the frog in the boiling water. You know, we stay, and at what point do we have to jump out? Because everything is costing more and more and more, and this fuel thing is going to throw everything over the top, if we can get it, like you said.
Well, it's like, remember that movie Pure Country when he was talking about the dancing chicken?
What?
you turn up the heat on the stage and the chicken starts dancing. It's like, well, why doesn't that chicken just jump off the stage? Here we are in California.
Here we are.
Actually, I like that better than the frogs.
I thought Pure Country. It's like, I wonder why does that chicken just... Why didn't he just jump off the stage?
Well,
why indeed? I don't know. So with this, there is a tremendous amount of interest now, suddenly, magically, in getting this message out. And so you're doing your town hall in Chico to get the word out. We're looking at doing something in Redding. With industry people. So I'm going to put out a pitch here. If you know anybody who's in industry, big, small, but related, like, I don't know, trucking, logging, manufacturing, everybody who uses oil
aviation.
And gas. Aviation, there you go. All those industries, I'd like to hear from you as far as putting together some town halls, because I have people from the industry side, the statewide industry side, that are like, yeah, let's do it. And we were hoping we could get you and Stan and the professor or some combination thereof to become part of this so that we can bring people up to speed and get industry to the table, because we have a lot of industries that are kind of hiding at this point. Oh, it's not going to be that bad. Oh, it super is going to be that bad, actually.
Yamaha, Budweiser, I mean, you name it. Everybody, the industries are flocking out of here. I mean, Solano County lost Budweiser at Fairfield and lost the refinery in Benicia.
Yeah, who would have thought? Isn't that nuts?
Well, I mean, you can't get beer or gasoline in Solano County. What the heck's going on?
All right, now it's time to leave.
All right, that's crazy. I'm going to put a contact form or an email address or whatever. I haven't done it yet, but I'll put it up there for today on the page. And I hope people will become engaged. If you know somebody has a chain of gas stations, for instance, runs a oil distributing company, trucking, aviation, what are some other ones? You know, all those things. We would very much like to put this together.
You can definitely put my contact information on there. I've been using vacation and stuff, but I'm very passionate about this, like we all are. I just see what's coming. I know what's coming. I flew the plane. I'm working with two of the most phenomenal persons God ever set foot to put on the earth, and that's in Stan and the professor. They're true, true patriots. But I'm not beyond, whatever you need to do, put on the contact to get a hold of me, too, because we're not... We don't have a year or two. We're there.
No, we do not. It would be fun if we did. Not really, but, And I really, for folks out there that are thinking, well, these guys, what a bunch of alarmists. If you don't
look at gascrisis.org. Look at gascrisis.org.
Yeah.
Challenge yourself. If you're listening to this and you're feeling that way right now, look at those documents. Challenge yourself to do your own investigation. It's not hyperbole. This is the real deal. We have 130 years of combined industry experience between the three of us. Stan has been working in it for over 50 years. The professor's been studying it since 1973, and I ran them, for like 20 years. So it's not hyperbole. Challenge yourself. Look at the web. Look at that domain.
Yeah. The California Fuel and Convenience Association CEO told me last week that they were in Washington, D.C., and they were speaking with legislators 2 hours before your report dropped. It was like, okay. And once yeah. that hit, you know, their eyes popped out. But
they're now Chevron and I know Aaron and now Chevron and Marathon yeah. are citing that report.
Right. That's the thing. So all of this is lined up nicely. There's a lot of background. So if you find us annoying and maybe you don't think we're credible, great. Go listen to some video. We've got Vince Fong, the Fongressman, as our former congressman used to call him, the Fongressman from down in the Central Valley. He's got a terrific video. That's from December of last year. So this didn't happen just this year. This started last year. Professor Miche out of USC, he's got some video up there, and there are quite a few media sources on there that you can read. If you're not a listener, not a watcher, go be a reader. But please, please do your diligence, because this is coming, and really apply this to November. We have the ability to do something about it, you know? And if we just continue doing the same old thing or sit home and
say your vote doesn't count.
Yeah, God, please don't ever tell me that. I'm going to have to strangle you. I'll have to commit a crime. That's bad. What is it? I saw a sign that said, I'm going to let God take care of it, because if I try to fix it, I'm going to jail. I think that's where we are right now. So let's see. We're in the last 30 seconds. So, Mike, you are fantastic. I know you have to get to the shop there. So we'll let you run off. Town Hall, again, there's a QR code. I've attached the link to the QR code. If you don't know how to work it, you can click the link. But it's going to be limited. So make sure that you get there early and get a, quote, seat in the room. Thank you so much for spending time with us, Mike.
Oh, thanks for having me again, Aaron. Take care.
All right. So gascrisis.org is the name of the game, and you can find this show at WeThePeopleRadio.us.